Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for standing by and welcome to the NVN DOE's FY 2021 full year financial results announcement. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode. At the end of the presentation, there will be a question and answer session for both phone and web participants. To ask a question on the phone, please press zero followed by one on your telephone keypad and wait for your name to be announced. For web participants, please type your question in the questions box on your screen. I would now like to hand the call over to your first speaker today, Mr. Stephen Rue, Chief Executive Officer. Please go ahead, sir. Thank you.
Thanks very much, Eddie, and good morning, everyone, and welcome to NVN's results announcement for the 12 months ended 30 June 2021. Our media release and presentation slides for today's call should be with you, but if you have not received them, please visit our website where they are now available. Joining me today is our Chief Financial Officer, Philip Knox, and our Chief Customer Officer, Brad Whitcomb. I will make some introductory remarks and touch on the highlights and achievements of the year before Philip will take you through the numbers in more detail. We will then go to questions and answers. Fiscal 2021 was another strong year of performance for NVN, as you can see here with our highlights. As at 30 June, total revenue for fiscal 2021 came in at 4.6 billion, which was a 21% increase on the previous year. Together with our continued focus on costs, we posted a 2 billion improvement in EBITDA compared to fiscal 2020 to bring our total earnings result to 1.35 billion dollars for fiscal 2021. Excluding the cost of acquiring subscribers from Telstra and Optus, our earnings increased by 46% to 2.6 billion dollars. At 30 June, we had connected 8.2 million homes and businesses to NVN, which represents an increase in connections of 933,000 premises when compared to fiscal 2020. We also continue to extend the NVN network to businesses and new homes as new housing estates and business precincts continue to be built. This included an additional 230,000 residential and business premises being made ready to connect in the year, taking the total number of ready-to-connect premises to 12 million at 30 June. In the 12 months to 30 June, we not only connected more Australians to the NVN, but Australians increasingly took up higher speed services as the proportion of homes and businesses on 50 megabits per second and faster grew to 75%. Pleasingly, we are seeing more premises also look beyond our 50 megabit per second plans, with the proportion of customers now on 100 megabits per second and higher at 17%, which is almost double the 9% at the start of fiscal 2021. This is a huge shift in the makeup of our speed tier mix, especially when you consider that just 4 years ago, the vast majority of customers, or some 84%, were on plans of 25 megabits per second and slower. Over that same period, the average monthly download amount per customer has increased from 207 gigabytes to more than 350 gigabytes a month. This didn't just happen. As Australia's major broadband wholesaler, we have supported this migration up the speed tier stack by offering a series of discounts and additional data inclusions to meet our customers' growing digital needs. This is great for many customers because it allows them to access data-intensive applications. It allows them to host high-definition video calls, access telehealth consultations, and many other applications that were not possible in the days of dial-up. Having access to higher speeds is becoming increasingly valuable to many Australian households as the number of connected devices continues to grow, driven in part by the adoption of online gaming consoles and connected devices like digital assistants and security systems. The point I'm making here is that speed isn't just downloading files as quick as possible. It's also about being able to do more across multiple devices with your broadband connection. This week, we will be releasing some new research from Accenture commissioned by NVN that shows the average NVN customer has saved more than 170 hours in time and effort, or around 4 working weeks per year, thanks to the ability to perform essential tasks using broadband connectivity. This research shows that the most time saved from using devices over the NBN includes services like telehealth and remote working, which saves on average approximately an hour and 10 minutes in travel and helps increase productivity. The fact that we have built this network to support the technological trends of today is a great thing for the country. I will now hand over to Philip, who will share more detail on our financials and capital management plans. Thank you, Philip.
I'm pleased to say that despite the continuing operational and financial disruptions of the COVID-19 pandemic, NBN Co met or exceeded its full-year guidance for activations, revenue, EBITDA and NPAT as set out in our 2021 corporate plan. Now, turning to my first slide, you can see the headline result for fiscal 21. Strong revenue performance has continued with revenue up 21% on the prior year to $4.6 billion. This growth is primarily driven by a significant increase in our customer base. And as Stephen has highlighted, 8.2 million homes and businesses are now connected to the NBN network. This growth in revenue, when coupled with relatively flat operating costs, have led to a 46% increase in EBITDA before subscriber costs or underlying EBITDA to $2.6 billion. Our strong revenue performance and declining subscriber costs has also translated into a considerable increase in our EBITDA result, which has grown from a loss of $650 million in fiscal 20 to a profit of $1.3 billion in fiscal 21. That's an EBITDA turnaround of $2 billion on the prior year and a great testament to the financial strength we have built into our business. Following the completion of the initial build in June 2020, capital expenditure was $2.8 billion, a reduction of 45% on the prior period. To finance NBN's ongoing activities and our new $4.5 million network investment plan, which we announced in September 2020, borrowings have increased by 16% to $23.8 billion. I'll talk more about our debt raising progress later in my presentation. Now, turning to the profit and loss statement on the following slide, which is presented in accordance with the statutory accounting principles, I'll talk to the details on revenue, expenses and EBITDA on the following slides. The statutory net profit after tax, or NPAT, for fiscal 21 was a loss of $3.8 billion, which is a 27% improvement on the prior year loss of $5.2 billion. I'd like to highlight that this result and the improvement achieved in FY21 is in line with our expectations and reflects the current stage of the company's maturity. Like all large-scale infrastructure companies, significant upfront investment in the construction of the network and customer connections has been made well before our EBITDA position reaches its maturity. And you can see this upfront investment reflected in the depreciation, finance and subscriber cost lines. In respect of respect to finance costs, these costs not only include interest on borrowings, but also finance charges relating to the accounting convention for leases, which primarily relate to the right of use arrangements to access and use Telstra supplied infrastructure. Now, turning to the activations in more detail on the following slide, in the last 12 months, NBN and its delivery partners connected more than 993,000 new customers, as I previously mentioned. This growth in our customer base was the primary driver of the 21% increase in revenue to $4.6 billion. Our residential ARPU has remained steady at $45. And this has been achieved against the backdrop of our significant industry and customer COVID support, mainly in the form of additional CVC capacity provided to RSPs at no extra cost. The impact of these COVID support initiatives on ARPU was offset by the increased demand for customers for higher speed plans, with 75% of customers now on a plan of 50 megabits per second or above. And finally, the FY21 revenue performance. Our business segment revenues continued to grow in a challenging market with a 26% increase on the prior period to $840 million for the year. Now, moving to operating expenses on the next slide. Operating expenses, excluding subscriber costs, reduced by 1% compared to the prior year. Now, looking at the category level, I'm pleased to say that despite the growth in network footprint and a 13% increase in our customer base, direct network costs grew by only 4%. Employee benefits expenses were 5% lower due to the reduction in FTEs following the completion of the initial build, and other expenses were flat year on year. After peaking in FY20, subscriber costs will continue to decrease going forward, and we expect these costs to cease in FY23. However, subscriber costs were higher than forecast in the year due to the timing of customer disconnection and migration activity from legacy Telstra and Optus networks. Now, moving to EBITDA on the following slide, you can see on this slide that our EBITDA position has continued to improve in recent years, and as I previously mentioned, is now positive at $1.35 billion. I am delighted to say that fiscal 21 was the first year in which NBN recorded a positive EBITDA result. EBITDA before subscriber costs is equivalent to our underlying EBITDA, as subscriber payments are non-recurring expenditure. Again, we are extremely pleased with the growth in our underlying EBITDA and the underlying EBITDA margin trajectory you can see on the slide. The growth in these metrics going forward is imperative to fund both our debt and future capital expenditure requirements. Now, turning to capital expenditure on the following slide, as I previously mentioned, capital expenditure has decreased significantly in FY21 when compared to the prior period, and as a result of the initial build being completed in June 2020. However, it's important to note that while the initial build has been completed, significant growth and maintenance capex will always be required to ensure the health of the network is maintained and future customer demand is met, and most importantly, that we continue to deliver on our purpose to lift the digital capability of Australia. So while we have seen a decrease in this fiscal year, our capex trajectory will fluctuate going forward as we continue to reinvest to expand the reach and capability of the network. Our new $4.5 billion network investment plan that we announced in September 2020 will be a significant driver of this. We will also continue to focus investment into rural and regional Australia, ongoing capacity enhancements and connecting new home and business premises. And we can already see our capital expenditure profile shaping from that of a predominantly a build company to an operating company with a $2.8 billion dollars of capital expenditure in FY21 relating to direct investments into our customer base. Specifically during FY21, we incurred significant capital expenditure in respect of connecting more than 933,000 new customers and to deliver capacity upgrades to cater for the growing demand for data. Build activities continued during the year to the extent the network to newly built homes and businesses to ensure all Australians have access to our ubiquitous network. We've also continued to invest in our fixed wireless and satellite networks, which deliver significant economic and social benefits to Australia's regional, rural and remote communities. Immediately after its announcement in September 2020, we began working on our new $4.5 billion network investment plan, which will increase the accessibility of our high-speed plans to more and more homes and businesses across Australia. And finally, in respect to capital expenditure, we understand the critical role the network plays in keeping communities connected and the nation productive. Therefore, we continue to invest in network resilience and security to ensure health and performance of the network is maintained in a rapidly digitising economy where connectivity to fast, reliable broadband has never been more important. Now, moving to our capital summary overview on the following slide. As a reminder, our capital management strategy remains focused on refinancing the Commonwealth loan by June 2024 and maintaining a strong liquidity position. In order to refinance the government loan and to execute network upgrade investments, we are planning to raise a total of approximately $27.5 billion of external debt by June 2024. As at June 21, the company raised in excess of $14 billion from debt capital markets and bank facilities, with $8 billion of this raise in FY21. These raisings have established a strong foundation for future bond issuances in both the Australian and offshore markets. These raisings have also enabled the company to repay $6.3 billion of the Commonwealth loan, which has a fixed interest rate of 3.96%. In addition, the diversification of our funding sources has enabled the company to increase its average tenor of debt and importantly reduce the weighted average cost of drawn debt to 2.79%, and we expect this to continue to fall as we further progress the refinancing of the government loan. Successfully raising more than $14 billion in private and capital markets debt has placed NBN Co. among the nation's top corporate borrowers, The support and interest we have seen from the debt markets is a strong signal of not just our maturity as a commercial entity, but also of the confidence that external lenders have in our operations and business models. Now, turning to my last slide, you can see as a summary of our cash flows for the 12 months ended 30 June 2021, I would like to highlight the free cash flow result, which has improved by 53% compared to the prior year. This result is due to the 64% growth in operating cash flows driven by growing revenues and prudent cost management coupled with the decline in capital expenditure and subscriber costs. Notwithstanding the great financial performance at FY21, we still have a big job ahead of us in continuing to grow our revenues and free cash flow position. These remain our financial targets in the medium term, as generating sustainable positive cash flows is essential to enable investment in the network to meet future customer demand, to deliver great customer service, to meet our Telstra lease obligations, and to enable the raising and servicing of debt. With that, I'll hand back over to Stephen.
Thank you, Philip. As you've just heard, fiscal 21 was another strong period of financial and operational success for NBN as we met or exceeded our key targets. This has been a commendable achievement by the company when you consider that over the last 18 months, the importance of and the need for NBN has been reinforced as Australians relied on the network like never before. Over this period, we have witnessed the rapid digitisation of society and the economy that would otherwise have taken many, many more years. Even under the strain of COVID, we have continued our business as usual activities, rolling out the network, connecting homes and businesses, and investing in better customer experience. Building these sustainable financial foundations will also continue to meet and fulfil the digital needs of Australian homes and businesses, and it goes to the core of why we exist, to lift the digital capability of Australia. By achieving our operational financial targets, we are putting ourselves on a trajectory to build the revenue base we need to reinvest in the business and fulfil our purpose. It is this trajectory that allows us to continue our efforts to improve customer experience and upgrade access technology to meet growing and evolving demand. To be clear, NBN does not build revenues for our own benefit. Revenues build the NBN for the benefit of all Australians well into the future. But to get to the level of financial independence where we can efficiently reinvest, we still have lots of work to do. Anyone who knows networks knows that there is no such thing as a set and forget build. The NBN is like a living, breathing organism. It needs to be managed, maintained and looked after. When you consider that we do this over an entire continent, you can appreciate it is no small feat. And considering the needs of tomorrow also means we must continue to invest in upgrading the network. If you take a simple view of our expenditure over the last 12 months, you can see we spent $2.8 billion of CapEx, $1.2 billion in subscriber costs, $900 million in lease payments, predominantly to Telstra, and another $2 billion in operating expenses. Together, that's almost $7 billion we have spent in the last year, operating and rolling out the network to new homes and businesses, upgrading capacity to support increased customer usage, and keeping rural and regional Australia connected to the cities and suburbs, and indeed the rest of the world. And while we expect our operating costs to continue to decline and subscriber costs to cease, to sustain this level of investment and operating expenditure, and to raise and service debt, it is critical that we operate a highly efficient business that generates sufficient revenues so we can not only meet customer demand, but meet their expectations of service. We know we have a big job ahead of us, but in our short history, we've already seen our efforts result in positive impacts in competition, consumer access, and affordability. And just recently, we saw Australia's largest bank, the Commonwealth Bank, announce it would soon be selling NBN services. It grows a growing group of new entrants like AGL from the energy sector that see real value in bundling and reselling our services to attract and retain customers. Seeing these sorts of organisations enter the telco sector reinforces our view that we are on the right track when it comes to balancing our important policy goals of improving access and competition with that of our financial obligations. Of course, there will be those who don't agree with us, and there will always be debate between retailers and NBN. To that, though, I would point out that for retailers, overage costs as a percentage of their total NBN costs have continued to fall and now sit at under 5% across the industry. For Australians, I would say that competition is better because of NBN. The prices for telco services have fallen in real terms since the NBN came along, and that we have remained well below what we are allowed to charge under the regulatory rules that determine our pricing. We don't see these debates as unhealthy, though. Rather, our determination to work in collaboration with industry and regulators is what we believe will deliver the best outcome for Australians. As we move through and beyond COVID, it will become increasingly important that we work together with the industry and regulators to sustainably reinvest in this network on behalf of all Australians. You will be aware of where our reinvestments are being directed in the next few years. In September last year, we released our Corporate Plan 2021 and unveiled our $4.5 billion investment to advance the capability, reach and value of the NBN. We have already made great progress on this plan, and I'm pleased to confirm we remain on track to make our highest wholesale speed plans available on a customer demand basis to up to 75% of homes and businesses on the fixed line network by 2023. More than 1.1 million premises have already been identified in the fibre to the node network that will undergo local fibre network enhancements, allowing them to become eligible for fibre to the premises services. And of those premises identified, 467,000 were in the design phase 30 June, with construction commencing on more than 100,000 premises. Recently, we awarded construction contracts to delivery partners with a total value of approximately $1.1 billion as part of this upgrade program. The award of these contracts means we are on track to deliver greater broadband access to more homes and businesses. Importantly, this work will also help stimulate job creation and retention through new build activities that would otherwise have scaled down at the end of our initial build. Our fibre to the curb network is also set for significant enhancements after we took the decision to expand our on-demand full fibre upgrade program to premises in the FTTC footprint. Using FTTP as the upgrade path in the fibre to the curb footprint provides a range of advantages when considering long-term costs, operational cost savings through IT simplification, and consistency with our objective to deepen fibre deployment across the network. We've also made considerable progress in a very short time with our HFC enhancement program. As of 30 June, all of the 2.5 million premises in the HFC footprint can access wholesale download speed tiers of up to 250 megabits per second, and around 87% of HFC premises can access our fastest speed tier, Home Ultrafast. This has been great progress when you consider that a little over a year ago, just 7% of the HFC network could get ultrafast. And together, these investments have already made a material difference to the capability of our network. From a total fixed line network perspective, and in less than a year, the proportion of customers now able to access our ultrafast plans has doubled to 40% and is climbing higher every month. We also continue to dedicate significant resources and capital to improve the service and capacity of our network to help more communities in rural and remote Australia realise the socioeconomic benefits that access to high-speed broadband can unlock. Our support of rural and remote Australia has become more important than ever over the last 18 months as more Australians choose to relocate to regional areas, often taking their city jobs with them, thanks to the connectivity benefits made possible by the NBN. On top of the approximate $200 million we invested in our fixed wireless and satellite networks to improve capacity and service in fiscal 21, in September last year, we also established our $300 million regional co-investment fund. This fund has been designed to enhance broadband services for rural and regional households, businesses and communities, primarily in areas that are currently served by our fixed wireless and satellite services. We have already made some great progress in this area and are looking forward to announcing some of the projects to come out of this fund later in the year. Our business fiber initiative is also progressing very well. This is the program to enable businesses with access to symmetrical download and upload speeds at prices traditionally reserved for the nation's major central business districts. We have already created 240 business fiber zones, and just yesterday we announced the addition of 44 new zones. This will deliver high-speed fiber to a further 60,000 eligible business premises across Australia, taking the total number of premises served by our business fiber zones to 850,000. Importantly, 112 of these zones are in regional areas, providing premium business-grade fiber access to more than 300,000 eligible business premises. These zones offer great value to businesses wanting to improve their connectivity options, particularly as businesses increasingly use services over enterprise Ethernet to support applications such as remote file storage, content hosting, unified communications, large file distribution, cloud-based business operations, and to connect branch office locations. These investments aren't only positive for the nation. They are helping establish an industry landscape where equity of access, reach, and wholesale pricing is helping all Australians connect. Over the past year, we have followed through on our promise to enhance industry collaboration with three key commitments. The first was the launch of our fourth wholesale broadband agreement, what we call WBA4, in December. The second was the outcome of our pricing consultations with industry in April, resulting in a price path commitment out to 2023. And the third was the commencement of the ACCC and industry stakeholder consultation process to revise our special access undertaking with the ACCC. I won't labour on the history of these various initiatives, but the important thing to understand here is that all three of these are aimed at ensuring we can work in the most seamless way with industry to support a sustainable sector that can reinvest in service and infrastructure and enable homes and businesses with the benefit of broadband. For us at NBN Co, this means being an efficient wholesaler that works closely with our retail partners to drive unnecessary cost out of the industry. We are making significant investments to simplify our IT systems, to reduce hardware and software complexity, and to move towards software-defined networks. This will help improve our back-end interlock with internet providers, enable better service outcomes for customers, and support our company-wide business simplification. We also remain focused on working with industry and regulators to develop products and pricing that are more modular, flexible, and simple. So together, we can meet the diverse needs of customers, whether they be small or large businesses, individuals, or large families. At its simplest, becoming an ever more efficient wholesaler is about being able to pinpoint the drivers of customer pain and cost in our industry and working together to eliminate these drivers. So in conclusion, fiscal 21 has been another incredibly busy and challenging period for NBN and the industry. We are proud of our financial and operating achievements over the past year, which have underpinned the governance of a secure and sustainable network. But for me, to have been able to help support the nation's broadband needs, to help homes, businesses, schools, and individuals stay connected to each other and the world, this has been our greatest achievement. Of course, we are not out of the woods yet, and it will be just as critical that we all continue to work together to support the nation through the ongoing impacts of COVID. Thankfully, the ubiquitous and reliable nature of the network, this digital backbone that is NBN, means we have a means to bridge many of the rifts caused by this pandemic. So before I close, I want to acknowledge how incredibly proud I am of all NBN employees and our delivery partners. Yes, we have had challenges, as every company does, but the commitment shown to customers and the overall purpose of the company as part of the national landscape makes me proud to be the CEO of NBN. To our frontline field workers performing critical services in difficult conditions, I would like to express my deep gratitude. Whether it is providing access to new markets for businesses, allowing school children in rural areas to connect to online learning, or ensuring the vital lines of communication in times of disaster are open and accessible, NBN is here to support the nation and lift the digital capability of Australia. So thank you. We will now take your questions. And back to you, Eddie.
Thank you very much, Mr. Roo. Ladies and gentlemen, we will now begin our question and answer session. We will first take questions from the phone. And as a reminder, if you would like to ask a question, please press 0 followed by 1 on your telephone keypad. That is 0 followed by 1 on your telephone keypad. Your first question is from the line of Kane Hannan from Goldman Sachs. Please go ahead, sir. Thank you.
Good morning, guys. Just two questions from me, please. Firstly, just interested if there's any more comments you can make around your discussions with the ACCC and the pricing construct. I suppose whether that presents any risks to your residential ARPU targets. And then secondly, you know, Telstra has obviously sold a stake in its mobile towers, going through the corporate restructure, trying to do something with the InfraCo fixed business. However, last time they tried to do that, NBN obviously wouldn't give them technical consent. So just interested whether things have been changed over the last 5 years, or what would be some of the key issues you think they would need to address to get your consent, if there's any comments you can make there.
Yeah, sure. Thanks, Kane. In terms of your first question on the ACCC and pricing construct, I mean, clearly we have, over the last few years, made quite a few, if you like, changes to our pricing construct. So, for example, introducing the bundles several years ago, the national pooling of CVC we did, and more recently, voluntarily entering into discussions with the ACCC regarding, and the industry, of course, regarding a new or potential new special access undertaking. However, as I said in my comments, Kane, that we've never shied away from the fact that as a business we need strong revenues. In fact, you know, I've been talking about it for years, and our corporate plans have always been very specific about the revenue streams that is needed to have a sustainable business, so we can keep investing, we can keep having great customer service. We obviously can raise and service debt, as I commented in my comments today. So it's important that any discussions with industry recognises the fact that NBN needs a clear level of sustainable cash flows to continue to invest in what I called earlier a living, breathing network. However, notwithstanding that, we are very open in our discussions with the industry and the ACCC, and happy to look at pricing constructs that may be different from what we have today, but what doesn't differ is the fact that we need sustainable cash flows going into the future, as we have laid out for many, many years. In terms of your second question regarding Telstra, I will leave any comments around the Telstra arrangements to Telstra management to talk to, other than to say that Telstra and NBN continue to have very good discussions with each other, and we have a good relationship. But really, any comments on their business, I leave to Telstra to comment on.
Cheers. Thanks very much.
Does that answer your question, sir?
Yeah, that's great. Thank you.
Excellent. Thank you, sir. Your next question is from the line of Entcho Raykovski from Credit Suisse. Please go ahead. Thank you.
Morning, all. I've got a couple of questions related to the business fiber zone expansion. So first one, it sounds like there isn't an additional capital investment required, but can you confirm that, whether there is any further CapEx that's required to create those new 44 business fibre zones, or whether it just falls within, I think it was the $700 million CapEx envelope you flagged in September last year? And then secondly, are you able to talk about the take-up to date of Enterprise Ethernet? And whether you had particularly high take up, and whether that's driving the expansion. And then if we're thinking about the 850,000 businesses that now fall within the expanded business fibre zones, what sort of penetration or take up do you expect longer term? Thank you.
Yeah, thanks for that. I'll ask Brad to comment on the take-up, but it falls, the answer to your first question is it falls within the capital envelope that we discussed in the past. But Brad, do you want to comment, please, on the Enterprise Ethernet?
Yeah, absolutely. Super excited to be able to add those additional 44 business fiber zones. And just as a reminder, if you're in a business fiber zone, that essentially means you can get a $0 fiber build. And then importantly, on top of that, you're also able to access the CBD zone pricing. As part of our announcement yesterday, we did talk about the additional 44 new zones, but there was another major element of it in that we are now collapsing what were two further zones, zones three and zone two, all the way down into zone one. So essentially, everywhere in Australia, you're either in a business fiber zone now or you're in zone one. That means much more simplicity for retailers, much easier for end customers to understand it, and also, in many cases, a substantially more value included in the offering. And the third major element was around our service delivery and being able to help our retailers with speed to revenue and also help end customers with the speed of getting their connection built out so they can start taking advantage of that great enterprise Ethernet service. In terms of the take-up, we are in a competitive space with other wholesalers that are offering services, so we're not disclosing specific take-up. But what I can tell you is we've seen more than a quarter of all services that have come on to Enterprise Ethernet have been in regional Australia, which we believe is one of our key sweet spots to be able to bring the advantage of those symmetrical services to regional Australia. And then also, despite the name Enterprise Ethernet, which you might think, understandably, is really aimed at the high end of the market, we've actually seen over 50% of the businesses that have taken up Enterprise Ethernet services are businesses with fewer than 20 employees. And we expect that trend to continue. In fact, if you look at, we now have a product where you can get 100 meg symmetrical service for less than $200 per month on a wholesale basis. We expect that to be quite competitive in the market.
Okay, and appreciate you can't disclose take up to date, but how do you think about that addressable opportunity around those businesses which are now covered by the business fiber zones?
No, we see it as a significant opportunity. And again, the fact that we've got businesses of all sizes, from large governments all the way down to what would have been considered micro in the past, taking up the service, we think bodes quite well. If you look at the industries that are being served by business fiber zones, you know, it's the things you might expect, architect, design firms, et cetera. We even have a funeral home, which kind of surprised us when we saw that, but that's actually for handling large files as a result of autopsies. So there's a significant underserved opportunity there, and we're bringing competition to that market.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Your next question is from the line of Ian Martin from New Street Research. Please go ahead. Thank you.
Thank you. Stephen, well done. Good results in the past
year.
Thank you. I'm just interested first in this question of financial independence you mentioned, which I assume means cash flow break even. And just wonder if you can talk about, I mean, it seems likely you're going to get there in the year ahead, and what are the key drivers of that? Not so much the revenue side, but those three OPEX items, subscriber costs obviously going to zero in the next 12 months or so. And where you see the level of CapEx leveling out. And then I have a second question, just going back to that ACCC consultation on the SAU, which you answered in terms of a focus on the sustainable cash flow, which obviously is clearly important. But the more pertinent question seems to be about the valuation that goes into the regulated asset base and particularly the initial cost recovery. I just wonder what your thoughts are on the ACCC's weighing into that and taking that decision on invested capital out of the hands of the board and canvassing the views of RSPs on what should have been invested or what has been invested.
Well, thanks, Ian. I'm a little bit restricted in, unlike in previous years, in talking in detail about the future because of the fact that we now have a significant level of debt holders in our business. So rather than talk about timelines or exact dollars, I can talk about the key drivers. Clearly these subscriber costs will go to zero, and you can see in our cash flow this year, I think we had about $1.5 billion worth of subscriber costs. In terms of operating expenditure, you would expect over time that we would continue to drive our operating expenditure down. In the second half of this year, we did have quite a lot of weather events that impacted our network costs, but more generally, you'd expect that OPEX would reduce over time, as you'd expect us to do. Clearly, we have committed to a program to upgrade 2 million of the homes to fiber to the premise on demand, and we're a large way through the HFC program, and we are entering into the start, really, I should say, of both the $300 million investment fund and the in regional Australia and the fiber to the curb upgrade program. But you can see on the slides that Philip talked to that we had CapEx of $5 billion in the past, and clearly that sort of levels won't continue into the future. And finally, we have always talked about the growth of our revenue streams, and that's a very important part of getting to that financial independence that we talked to. There's one other driver, and that is refinancing the government debt, which currently sits at 3.96%, and you can see from, again, from Philip's slides, that we have been successful in raising debt from both bank and international markets at a lower rate than that. So all of those come together, frankly, to drive that financial independence that we talked about, and the importance, therefore, of free cash flow for us to continue to deliver services and continue to upgrade as demand needs, which we think will continue. In terms of your second question, I think when we voluntarily entered into discussions with the ACCC and industry, we expected that all issues would be canvassed, and it's not a surprise that is occurring. And frankly, we welcome that. I think it's important that the issues regarding pricing are well ventilated and well discussed, and as you know, it's been a open and constructive process to date, and I hope that will continue to be the case. And you know, we'll continue to work through various issues, including the one that you raised, in coming months. But I think it's not surprising that there's an open discussion about many issues.
Okay, thanks, Stephen.
Thank you very much. Once again, ladies and gentlemen, that is 0 followed by 1 on your telephone keypad, and wait for your name to be announced. That is 0 followed by 1 on your telephone keypad. Your next question is from the line of Josh Taylor from The Guardian. Please go ahead, sir. Thank you.
Hi, Josh. Hi. Thanks very much for your time. You talked in the results about sort of meeting revenue targets. I mean, I think in the corporate plan for the 2021, it was $4.5 billion, and you got $4.6 billion. But that is significantly down from what it was originally projected to be in the 2018 corporate plan, which was, I think, $5.4 billion. Now, this is despite the fact that you added, I think, 300,000 premises that you found in the brownfields footprint. I was just wondering if you can explain why that happened. And this is something that Labor has written to the Auditor General about in terms of bonuses paid to executives. Can you also explain sort of how much the revenue target meeting the corporate plan factors into how much you pay your executives?
Yeah, Josh, I get asked this question regularly, as you would know. But there are many things that occur preparing corporate plans, projecting way out in the future, which is really, and then making those projections public, of course, which is something that's perhaps unique about NBN. But between that period of time, there were many different things that occurred in terms of pricing changes, in terms of the timing of rolling out the timing around the HFC network, for example, and of course the impact of COVID, which you mustn't forget, whereby we provided a very significant support to the industry last year. That's something that could never have been projected back in 2018 was the year I think that you talk about. So if you think about specifically in the last 15 months, whereby we have really supported the industry and supported consumers in many ways through things like CDC Boost, through leading an engineering team, really through providing various packages to businesses and consumers, and it's a result of really those matters that remain flat this year, and really because of the support that we provided to the industry. But prosecuting why projections back in 2018 differ going forward, that happens in every business, Josh. And again, I get asked this many times. What I do know is that we set ourselves a corporate plan target last year, and we were pleased with the fact that we saw more customers come onto our network in the first half of the year than actually we had anticipated at the time of doing the doing last year's corporate plan. In terms of your second question, today is not really the day in terms of prosecuting remuneration. And in terms of remuneration issues, that's really a matter for the board, Josh. And when our annual report is published, you'll see in that annual report, as we have for many, many years, very clear and transparent disclosures around our remuneration.
Just one follow-up. Does that mean that over the long term, we can't really factor in what the projections are for revenue in the outward years? We can't sort of rely on them as reliable figures when we're looking at the corporate plans?
I think, Josh, in any business, when you do long-term projections, you make certain assumptions, and those assumptions can prove to be very, very correct, or they can prove to vary depending upon the circumstances of the day. So, for example, several years back, we didn't project a $4.5 billion further investment into our business, and that therefore would then get factored into future long-term projections. So I think with any long-term projection in any company, you can take the trends as being appropriate, but you can certainly take a one-year budget as being an absolute guidance for the year ahead. But longer-term projections always get changed with whatever happens in the economy, in society, or within your business, or within competition, for example. So you can take the trends, Josh, but any business adjusts long-term trends on an annual, long-term projections on an annual basis.
Thanks.
Thank you, sir. There are no further questions at this point. I would now like to hand the floor back to Mr. Roo for any closing remarks. Please go ahead, sir. Thank you.
I'd just like to thank everyone for your interest today coming on and hearing our results. I will say that, as I said in my remarks, I think we live in really unusual times, but it's a time when we are seeing trends in society. We're seeing trends in where people live, with people moving more to regions. We're seeing trends in terms of how people are working more from home, how people are digitizing their business. And there is no doubt that this is a time when broadband access has never been more important. When I go all the way back to why NBN was set up, I go back to 2009 and its purpose at that time, or its reason for being set up. It was to do two things. It was to drive retail competition, and it was to create economic and social benefits to Australians. And there's no doubt that NBN is delivering upon both of those. We are seeing very healthy retail competition with new players coming into the market, players who really focus on customer experience actually coming into the market. And we're also seeing increasingly the importance of broadband, and that the importance of broadband is not lost on us. We have an absolute responsibility to deliver for the nation, to continue to make our asset, which is the backbone of the nation's broadband capability, more and more stronger, and to continue to invest in both customer service and invest in services where people need upgraded services from what they have today, and ensuring that we meet the needs of today and we meet the needs of tomorrow. And this has been a year towards that, which we're very proud of. So thank you for your time and efforts, and I look forward to ongoing discussions with all of you. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Roo. Ladies and gentlemen, that concludes today's announcement. Thank you for participating. You may all disconnect. Thank you.